I'm Jill Bloom, publisher of Roofing Contractor. Welcome to the Roofing Contractor podcast show, and thank you for listening. The editor of Roofing Contractor, Art Eisner, and I are so honored to speak today with a special Q&A with Ken Kelly, the president of Kelly Roofing. Gosh, I think I've known you, Ken, for about nearly 20 years, and I've watched you over the years grow an incredible company and earn multiple awards, one of which is Roofing Contractor's Residential Roofing Contractor of the Year Award in 2019. And I have to say, Ken is someone who is always willing to share his successes and failures to help other contractors in the industry. And he has spoken and attended many Best of Success conferences and industry events. So we are here again today as Ken is so gracious to share his time and his insights with us. So, and those insights, gosh, they are on business, technology, storms, COVID, and also what's next. You know, I think we're going to hear that soon. But anyway, Ken, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Art, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Jill. Ken, it's great to be with you again. I really appreciate you joining us. So where we left off, last time you really walked us through your involvement and your ascension, not necessarily by choice, into company leadership and how the company really kind of evolved through some big challenges just getting started and through the Great Recession. And let's talk about where your business was, circa 2015, and what was your market like at that point, and what were your hopes for your business at that point?
The market was really on the rise. We had come out of the Great Recession and we were starting to make really good strides. And I realized that all the effort that we had put into building a really good system, whether it was a management system or a software system or a sales system, they were really starting to pay off. And then in 2017, Hurricane Irma direct hit our hometown.
Right. And that's obviously a great segue. Now, you'd been through storms before and certainly done some storm work, but before the storm had hit, talk about what was your perception of storm work at the time and how big of a part of your business was it?
So prior to, we had multiple hurricanes. I mean, I really cut my teeth on Hurricane Andrew in 1992, but the two big ones that made a difference in our career was in 2004 with Hurricane Charley and 2005 with Hurricane Wilma. But we took a different attitude. I think it's the same attitude that most contractors would take. They said, there's a storm, whether it's a hailstorm, tornado, hurricane, whatever it happens to be, that hits your hometown. And all of a sudden you're inundated with people that come in and know how to work storms. And they're good at it. I mean, they're really, really good at it. But our attitude was, we don't really know the storm side of the industry. We don't really understand how to negotiate with insurance companies or create scope of works or deal with desk adjusters. So what we're gonna do is we're just gonna do what we know. We're gonna be the retail roofer in a storm market. Now, in 2004 and 2005, we did well. There was plenty of work. But what we didn't realize is how it was going to affect us after the storm. Because you go into a market where pretty much everything is new. And so we invested a lot in our service business, but it really wasn't driving the revenue numbers. And like they say, nothing beats a strong top line. So a resentment built up. And I started to think about the roofers who travel and understand how to work storms. I resented that they were able to do that in my own backyard. I was the hometown roofer. Why didn't I get more of that work? And that resentment built into, if you can't beat them, join them. And so in 2015, like you were talking about, starting really in 2012, I developed a system that if we needed to expand quickly, we could. If we needed to contract quickly, like for instance, another Great Recession, we could. Now, little did I know that I was going to have to expand and then somewhat contract and then expand again in the coming years as we were hit with a hurricane and then COVID, of course. And that's exactly what happened. So it was a really neat way to test the system. And I'm happy to share any of the things that I learned when it came from the transition, when it comes to the transition from your residential hometown retail roofer to understanding and executing on the insurance side of the business well.
Awesome. Well, let's dive into that because I think there were, you know, many elements to your success and how you were able to not just pivot during Irma, but actually, thrive coming out of that experience. Bojio and I had the good fortune of visiting your headquarters in 2019, and having been in and around television stations before in my media career, it seemed strangely familiar. So talk to us a little bit about how, first of all, your location change and how that really also benefited your response to the storm.
Well, we can't ignore the fact that we live in an area that's susceptible to hurricanes. So when we were looking for a new, larger location to foster our growth, one of the primary requirements was going to be we needed a backup power system, or we needed to be on the essential power grid so that when storm knocked out power, we were one of the first ones to come back online. And it turned out that the area that we found was actually the police, fire, medical, couple of cellular towers, and then also the big iHeart radio tower facility. And the building was basically not being used at all, except to house some servers. The rest of it was wide open and empty. So I negotiated a really good favorable lease, and that's where we moved to. And sure enough, it really paid off, because while the rest of the town was weeks without power, we were back up and running in less than 2 days. And that really helped us to hit the ground running and to jump ahead of everything else that was about to happen.
And certainly that must have put you in a, also give you an advantage over some of those out of towners that started to come in. I mean, let's not forget Irma itself was a Category 5 storm. Like you said, it hit you, you know, directly. And it was one of those storms that lasted, obviously not just all in your area, but it was like a 2 week storm, if I remember correctly, and caused over $77 billion, of damage. So this was definitely a unique weather event. And obviously, let's talk about that advantage over the out of town roofers, and then touching on the insurance that you mentioned.
Perfect. So the interesting thing about Irma was, it was a true testament to just how accurate our weather forecasting had become. Because you're right, a week in advance, the storm path that they had predicted, if you looked at the center of the cone, that's exactly where the storm ended up hitting. And what's crazy about it is the couple days before, the line shifted from our side of the state to the other side of the state over like the Miami market. And I later found out after speaking to the director of the National Hurricane Center that they did that, they manipulated that line purposely. Because people in Miami were paying attention too much to the center line of the cone. Going forward, the National Hurricane Center said they will never put a center line in the cone of probability, because people were literally looking at the line, zooming it in and saying, oh, that line is not over my house, so I'm safe. Not realizing that hurricanes are hundreds of miles wide. So they purposely moved the line little by little 3 days prior to the storm hitting so that it was over Miami, so that people would wake up and take the storm seriously. It caused somewhat of a panic, and there was somewhat of a backlash because of it. But then the day before, they moved it back across the state, the 104 miles, to where it actually ended up hitting and what it was originally predicted to hit. So good for our weather people, but I think it's a lesson that we all need to take that seriously when we're warned ahead of time.
So now, did that shift throw you off in terms of your preparation at all?
Yes and no. I would say it threw us off because there were employees at the last minute who were scrambling to make decisions, even though they had really made them ahead of time. And then as it shifted, they decided not to go. And then when it came back, they all started to flee. Now, here's an interesting story about my father. My father was trying to get out of the area. And at the time, we had a place up in Blue Ridge, Georgia, in the mountains, and he was trying to get up there, but gasoline was an issue. So he leaves at 8 a.m. At midnight, he can't get any further north than Tampa. And I said, Dad, just turn around and come back. You're not going to get out of the state. You're probably never going to get there. And the storm's hitting, you know, you need to be somewhere where you're safe. So he ended up coming back and wrote it out at my place, which is somewhat hurricane protected. But that goes to show you how having the right plans and preparing will really set you up for success. So inside Kelly Roofing, we have three sets of disaster plans. And it's all based on the size and scope of the storm. So we have the light, the medium damage, and the heavy damage storms. Now, we really don't want a light damage or a heavy damage. Light damage, it's an annoyance. I got to download all the stuff off of roofs. There's really no damage, so you really don't get any additional bump from it. It's just annoying. And those happen pretty regularly. If you have the heavy damage, well, there's structural issues, right? Entire truss systems and plywood and everything is blowing out. Windows, doors, they're blown in. That is a much, much bigger and more catastrophic type damage. It's not something we can just come in and start replacing roofs because the structures have to be rebuilt. And that's usually going to prompt code changes and so forth. So it becomes more problemsome. This one ended up being, although it was a Cat 5 early on, by the time it was ready to turn and hit us, it actually slowed down to a Cat 4 and then once made landfall, Cat 3. And by the time it had moved up into the state a little bit, the back half of the storm somewhat fell apart. And we were fortunate because even at a Cat 3, it's enough to actually destroy structures. But because it was only one-sided and the back half of the storm really wasn't as intense, it really just did simple damage to trees, gutters, power lines, and roofs, but not enough to actually blow in windows and doors and compromise structures. So it was the perfect scenario for us. And that's when we pulled out that emergency plan and started executing on it.
And you started getting flooded with calls almost, you know, immediately, right? And we're talking thousands, tens of thousands, right?
Yes. So in the first 30 days, 26,800 requests for service. It was really unprecedented. And it's funny because I had spent years automating the system in preparation for this event. And I was working closely with our partners, for instance, Anna from Art Unlimited, who's our marketing team. Her and I were on the phone constantly in the days running up to this, talking about how we're going to get the information out, what our plan was, how we're going to communicate that, and so forth. Now, luckily, all of our systems are cloud-based. So as long as we have internet, we can continue to work 100% wherever we happen to be. We didn't have to worry about a server that was going to run and store our files and run our software applications because everything is hosted by Microsoft. So it was really simple for us to recover quickly, even on cell phone data cards, right? Even if you turn your phone into a hotspot, you were working. But what we ended up realizing is that people had really one need. And so we took down all of our existing marketing from our website and we stood up a single page that offered people three options. Number one, emergency service. You have a leak and you need it fixed. We also would capture the credit card information, so we didn't have to worry about that. Number two was a free estimate. And number three was an insurance consultation, usually like a meeting with an adjuster or something along those lines. And what was neat about that is we were able to capture that information. And I thought that was the slickest thing. But then I realized that it didn't quite integrate completely with our existing software system. So I'm running through the office after the storm. I'm going to fast forward just for a second and tell you where that really hurt us and then where we recovered. I started seeing all these people arriving at the office for work. And these are people I don't know. These are new people. Now, who are all these people? And what it is we just started hiring bodies to take all of these requests for service and to enter them fully into the job jacket. In other words, our system did a good job capturing the information, but it wouldn't match or pair it and put it in any way that we could actually execute on it. So we had like 20 people in our training room, all with these laptops and iPads, taking that information, filling in the rest of the details so that our system could then put it into the views, organize it by salesperson, organize it by territory, and start the communication with the customers. And I said, wait a minute, if I just add a couple of more workflows, I can get all of that information to flow exactly the way you need it. We don't need to have all these people staying up into the wee hours of the morning, entering this information and fulfilling the details. So that's exactly what we did. You know, one night staying up, writing some workflows, and I had it completely automated from website all the way into dispatch. And oh my gosh, you don't realize how far short you fall until you need it. But that was a true test of the system. And we found out that it worked, let's say 80% of the way there. And it was easy to fix that last 20%. But I apologize for jumping ahead. I'm happy to go back and fill in
some details. That's quite all right. So I'm curious, were some of these people that were basically doing data entry, were they also part of your call center response team, or how did you kind of staff and triage all of those calls?
So I was pretty fortunate. My son, who at that time was in the Marines, had a bunch of high school buddies who played on the football team. I was a football coach at the Pop Warner level, and I knew a lot of them. And they were working down at the Marco Marriott, which you guys know, which is now the JW Marriott. We've had some best of success seminars there. And they were the guys on the beach that would do like the beach chairs and the umbrellas, the wave runners, all those type of things. And all of a sudden, that hotel, as you know, was decimated. And they had no job. So they reached out to us, or my son reached out to them, I forget how this worked, and said, hey, dad needs some help. Can you come in? And they did. And they're all gamers. So for them to sit on an iPad and draw out a roof and do the measurements and it was perfect. It actually worked really well. We trained a lot of them into the insurance side of the business and sales and everything. It was just incredible how it worked out. And when we, didn't need them anymore, we call it like the snake eating the egg. You can actually see the egg through the body, right? And then it eventually gets digested down to nothing. Well, as this huge chunk of work comes in, you need people to answer the phones. You need people to sell. You need people to turn them into orders. You need people to pull the permits. You need people to schedule the production. You need people to do the walkthroughs and the invoicing. And we use that same team. And they ended up doing just about every position in the company, but it was funny. You could tell that we were entering a new phase when that team was onto a new task.
So going to the old football team, directly taking a page out of the Greg Wallach playbook.
Exactly right.
Nicely done. Well, when it did come to getting all those calls and touching on something you mentioned a few minutes ago, how were you able to prioritize roof jobs or roof repairs that your people could do right away, as opposed to some of those that, yes, maybe you could capture the sale on, but wouldn't be able to work on for a few weeks until some of those structural issues were worked out?
So there's a lag. There's a lag from the time the event happens to the time you can get approvals from insurance companies. But during that lag, all building owners have a fiduciary responsibility as per their policy to make whatever type of emergency repairs they need to prevent further damage, right? You don't want to make the loss any bigger than it was. So for us, it was an excellent opportunity to prioritize all of those emergency repairs. And we were running around doing temp repairs, whether it was tarping. We tried to stay away from tarping. We're not a big fan of it because the next wind gust pretty much takes them off the roof. Instead, we would open up areas and we would use an underlayment, usually a peel and stick. And that was our primary way of doing temporary repairs. It worked on flat roofs, it worked on pitched roofs, it worked on any type of pitch roof. So we would just send out crews. And then how we prioritized them was based on either zip code or, in a lot of cases, we got down to the neighborhood and even the street level. And that was based on what our computer system said we had the most need in. So it would organize everything first by zip code, next by neighborhood. And once we saw the numbers of hundreds of opportunities and there are hundreds of requests for service, we would set one project manager in that neighborhood or on that street or in that zip code. They would have two or three crews with them and they would run the whole thing. And since all of the payments were done automatically in the back end through credit cards, it was really simple for them to assign it to a crew. The crew would get the job on their phone. They would go ahead and do whatever repairs were necessary. They would enter the amount. They would take pictures that would all upload into our system. A customer would get a copy of those via email. And then once the project manager closed it out, it automatically went into invoicing. The customer was billed and obviously the payment was processed at that time. So it actually worked really well. And it turns out that those crews, basically all of our crews at the time, there was about 35 of them, as we took our re-roof crews and we split them up and we made about 35, 3 to 4 individual service or emergency repair crews. They were busy for about the first 90 to 120 days before the re-roofs finally came in and started getting the approvals. And we've had a chance to meet with the adjusters and checks were coming in for the homeowners to actually spend. And that's when we shifted back into more of a traditional service replacement split.
And so when your crews and project managers were out in these neighborhoods, how crowded were they with competitors or, you know, from reputable guys to the truck in the trucks out there? And how were they able to kind of beat back that competition on scene?
In the first 90 days, I felt like we were alone. And here's the thing. Nobody knows your hometown like you do. So when you look at areas where you would want to set up shop, we took the approach that there are certain areas that have been very good to us in the past. We have a huge concentration of past customers, and we decided we're going to prioritize them. Most everyone who came in from out of town went right to ground zero, which in our case was Marco Island. Marco Island had been good to us, but it wasn't our best areas, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So we let all the storm chasers, and I apologize if anyone takes offense to that word, but that's what we kind of call them, and or stormers or whatever. They went to Marco Island and turned it into a red ocean. That's a reference to a book called Blue Ocean Strategies, where there's a bunch of sharks and there's one piece of meat and they just tear it apart, right? And they just killed each other on Marco. And we had work there, don't get me wrong, because we had customers that only wanted to use us because we've been their roofer for years. But for the most part, we kind of stayed out of it and had the whole rest of the area to ourselves. And it was a really nice move. And you being the hometown roofer, you know your area better than they do. They're just figuring it out. Right? They're just going to go where the catastrophic damage is. And we kind of stayed away from it, and it worked out for us.
So quick question for you, Ken. I mean, I remember when I was talking to you, and I believe that was the year that we were in Tucson for Best of Success. And you were telling me, Jill, it is like a war zone here. This is not something like I've never seen before. And I love that you mentioned the book, The Blue Ocean, because Ted Jorvey talked about that at Best of Success one year. And but I believe you were telling me, and just so I can clarify this for people that are listening that are trying to set up their processes, how did you set up your, did you have your phone system direct everybody to the website? Is that, how did you set that up? So people call, like if they felt like they could get some immediate response or like, okay, I've been heard. Cause you know, of course I think you said you had how many, 2,800 service calls in the first?
26,800.
26,000, sorry. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. We just had a message on the phone line that says we're accepting requests for service by going to our website, kellyroofing.com. And it was one page, it was mobile responsive. It was very easy to sign up because we knew that anyone who was going to the site, that's what they needed. It was gonna be one of those three things. So rather than spending time on the phone, that's what we did. Now, if they left a message, because we said, you know, otherwise leave a message. That message was immediately turned into an email. It's a Microsoft system. And we were responding to those via the email. So you didn't have to actually call a number, listen, write stuff down and then respond. It was dictated out in the email. We could forward it to whoever we needed to, or we could act upon it and enter into a system or forward to the customer with whatever our response would be.
Got it.
Yeah, that helped. It's wherever we could. So there's some other things that we did. So we're going back to the disaster plan. Mm-hmm. Based on the level of damage of storm, and this was, again, was a medium, there are certain things that get enacted, whether it's stocking up on gasoline, coming up with the generators, making sure that everybody has a place to eat, you know, food. Food's a big issue. Laundry. A lot of people don't think about laundry. Ice. Ice is a premium. So it was really important for us when we had our facility to make sure we're not on city water. Right? We set up a well. We purposely put a well in and our own reverse osmosis system. And we had two industrial, like restaurant size ice machines in case we ever needed this. Now, there are days in the summer where it's hot enough to where we actually go into the second ice machine and start pulling from it. But 3/4 of the year, we don't even turn that on. You know, we just kind of rotate them every other month. But having that after a storm, now all of a sudden you're able to do things. We bought microwaves and we put it in all the trucks. You know, now you can go to, like, for instance, Sam's, and you got these frozen meals, and you can just throw these things at guys as they're leaving the shop and in the morning, and they've got three meals that they can do. The famous Roach Coach, right? So for years we had the Roach Coach. We I don't even know what the guy's name is. We just call him Cubano. And he comes to our shop every single morning. He still comes to the shop every morning. But what I did is I called him up and I said, listen, I'm going to lease you. You're not going to go anywhere else. You're just going to go to my job sites. Here's the list of all the neighborhoods we're in. Here's our addresses. Whatever it costs, you send me the bill. I mean, that was costing almost $1,000 a day. But when you have hundreds of people, right, that's kind of nothing. They couldn't get food elsewhere anyways. Then you got to eat. So that's what we do. We run him around all our job sites and I would pay for his gas and then he'd send me a bill and boom. We had some of the wives of some of our employees. They're not working. There's nothing to be done. So they sat home and did laundry. So the guys would come in with garbage bags and they would sit there and write their name on the garbage bag. You know, I'm talking seriously, like Drawflex white kitchen tall garbage bags, you know, make sure they're white because otherwise you're not going to see the writing in permanent marker. Mm-hmm. And you write the employee's name and number on it. Everyone has an employee number. They go and they do the laundry. Next day, here it is. It's all back in a new bag and it's stacked up and folded and off to the races they go. You know, it's all these things that you realize. Another thing, we were right in the middle of doing a hotel, doing the roof on a hotel when the storm hit. And obviously there's nobody vacationing in Florida, you know, at least not immediately after the storm. So we made a deal with the guy. He said, listen, you don't have to pay us the balance. Let us have the hotel for the next 2 months. So we had every room in the hotel. And what happened was we were able to take our existing crews and we were taking our number, you know, 2, 3, and 4th person down in crew level who knew us, knew our system, been with us for years. And we made them crew leaders and we would put them at the head of any of these new crews that were trying to come into the area to do work. Now in Florida, you can't sub, right? It's a third degree felony to do contracting without a license. So there's no subcontracting, but we would just put the whole crew on our payroll. We'd put this one employee that we knew and we trusted and had faith in at the top of it. And the quality of work didn't sacrifice, right? It wasn't like we had to worry about leaks down the road, which is typically a huge issue. You make a huge pop because of the storm. And then you spend the next years giving back all your profits in warranty calls. We know because right now, here we are 4 years later, we're actually replacing roofs that are only a year or two old because of how horribly they were installed. And this now is all out of the pocket of the poor homeowners. And it's not their fault, right? Somebody comes in and says they can help you. You just want to get back to normal life. Of course, you're going to take the chance. And that's what happened. So it's really sad. In our permitting department, there are over 20,000 permits that have failed inspections that haven't been closed out, right? Still left over from the storm. This is a huge burden on our population that now they're going to have to pay a roofer like us to go out and certify that somebody else's installation was done correctly. You're gonna have to have an engineer sign off on it before you can finally get your permit. And by the way, you can't sell your house until you do. It's a horrible thing that happens. And I saw this in prior storms and I wanted to try to mitigate that as much as possible on this one. So that's why I really took the time to learn the insurance system, the insurance process.
So to put it in perspective, so how many days were you guys without power? And who was doing the wives were doing laundry. Were they doing laundry at your facility or back after once the power came back on?
That was once the power came back. It was funny because whoever had power, that's who you were. You know, we'd send a bunch of people there and they'd shower, right? We had people sleeping in the office. You know, during the storm and after the storm, because they didn't have power and our office did. We had customers who'd come in and sit in our showroom just to use the internet, you know, just to kind of communicate with friends and family that they were okay because the cell towers were down.
Yeah. Now,
you know, kudos to T-Mobile and AT&T. They both had towers on our site and we saw them every day come with the refueler and fuel the generators for the first few days until power was restored. But, you know, that it was really funny. It's a unique dynamic when the whole society starts shutting down. You realize how dependent we are on these electronic devices.
And you had ice, Ken. So that I'm sure that drew people in. I'm glad you told those stories because I did want to ask, how difficult was it to keep morale up in internally and to really get the buy-in, you know, you needed to really work at such an accelerated pace?
The worst thing you can do is ever try to sugarcoat anything to your people or treat them like they wouldn't understand or they're not, you know, to that level. No, you know, we'd have powwows. We call them huddles every single morning. And it was, listen, here's the situation. You know, this is what we're expected to do. Here's the promises that we made. Here's how important everyone's role is. We talk openly about problems. We fix them. You know, it's not just a gripe session. This is, okay, I understand what your problem is. I'm going to restate it so it's clear to everyone. I'm going to go around the room one time. Everyone gives me an idea what they think we should do to fix that. And you only get one chance. No politicking. We're not coming back around. You don't get to repeat something. If it was said by somebody else, just say pass. And boom, by the time you get around the room, you get some pretty good ideas. You know, you get a couple of people that say, all right, let's vote. Let's pick them. And boom, that becomes your fix. And when you give people the authority to make decisions and you give them the responsibility to make good ones, you'd be shocked how people rise to the occasion. You know, all of a sudden, not everything needed to go through management. They were just taking it and running with it because they understood what Jocko Willink calls commander's intent. This is what we want to accomplish. Whatever you need to do to make that happen, go do it. Right. So there were people who were making huge company decisions without ever talking to the executive leadership team. And they did that because they knew they were allowed to. And let me tell you, they were closer to the action than we were. They were making better decisions than what we could have. So it works out well.
Got it. And I do want to ask, you're obviously a very thorough and reflective guy. No doubt you've improved your disaster crisis response plan since Irma. Did laundry or other things like the ice, did those make their way into that plan? Or what were some takeaways that that you definitely improved upon?
So I know now, and one thing I would put out there to everybody is when you look at insurance pricing, the insurance pricing that you pull, because you pull price lists right after a storm, is grossly misunderstated because it has not yet had the opportunity to be reflected in the companies that produce these price lists, whether it's insurance carriers or the third-party providers. Pull that list every single day for months, like don't stop, right? As long as there's insurance work going on, every day pull a new price list. We got lazy on that and just kind of ran with our pricing and figured, no, it's enough. It's, you know, we're making good money. It's covering our costs. It's 3 months go by, I pull it again. Prices had gone up 25%. And I had months of bids out on the market that were up to 25% underbid. So, you know, do that. That's in the new plan, I can tell you. You know, we'll leave way too much on the table in that aspect. Couple other things, we've really tightened up the computer system. We definitely would look, there's more technology that's on the market today. Whereas before we were using RoofSnap and having the team draw out the roofs on iPads and then manually entering the numbers. Well, now you can order entire zip codes and every building with every dimension on it can be downloaded in an XML file. All right, that's easily parsed out in our system now. The other thing that we really worked on right after the storm hit, we had not had the chance to build this yet, but then of course it became critical. So we ended up putting it in real fast, is when you have a system, you have a process, you shouldn't have to deviate too much from that system in order to incorporate insurance work. You know, everybody thinks there's this huge mystery between insurance and retail. There's no difference. The same sales procedure you would use for a customer that was retail, you're going to use for insurance. And there's really only a couple things that are different. I'm not going to go word by word, but listen to the logic behind it. The opportunity for a homeowner to get virtually a free roof minus their deductible is a pretty positive opportunity, especially if the roof was old and almost near replacement anyways. So I'm sure that they would have come out of pocket to put that roof on if a storm didn't hit. So that means they're either psychologically prepared to spend money or they have actually put money aside for future roof replacement. Well, that is money that they would be willing to spend on top of the insurance money, on top of the deductible, to put on a roof that would hopefully withstand the next storm so they don't have to go through this again. So all of a sudden, your sales pitch, which you would typically do in retail, is just as much, if not more important and beneficial to both you and the customer by selling upgrades. And insurance people don't sell them. You know, they're like, oh, we can do your roof. Just, you know, we'll either do it for free or you just pay your deductible. They're leaving a ton on the table and they're shortchanging the customers. Gutter replacement, opportunity to put in skylights, opportunity to put in insulation, opportunity to upgrade the roof covering so it's either higher wind resistant or longer lasting. Right? We're there. This is what we do. Why not help them? Why not put them in a better position going forward? So that's one of the things that we really raced to do. We had a system that priced roofs for retail. All we did was create a separate pricing model that mirrored exactly what the insurance company's pricing was, and an output page. So I'm either going to hit Control and P and I'm going to print my standard proposal, or I'm going to hit Control and P on a different page and I'm going to print the breakdown that the insurance companies need. There's no difference up until that point. It's just which path are you going to follow? And if the presentation's the same, the communication's the same, the execution on the operations side is the same. It's just two different pricing levels that you're running, because one, it's lump sum, and one, it's broken down. Bottom line's the same, but the insurance company will accept one, insurance company will not accept the other. So that's all we did. And it's that simple. There's no mystery to this. You're giving it to the customer, you're going to make the customer your best friend, and then they're going to help you lobby to the insurance company to accept the scope of work that you, the expert, have created. You know, we can't go in and talk policy. We can absolutely go in and talk scope of work. And we're the expert in that situation. So really, for those who have stayed away from insurance work, this is all you need to do. Break down your pricing in every single component in the system. Everything from a sheet of plywood, a nail, a roll of felt, every single item that's going to go into it up just needs to be broken down and a price put into it. And if you do that, the insurance companies will accept it, usually without ever even questioning it. That's it. That's the secret to insurance. There's nothing more to it.
So it sounds like making that realization, helped you, or helped maybe win over, some homeowners. How did the insurance adjusters you work with take that in? Did it help your relationship with them as well?
When you become the one company that most of the adjusters and insurance carriers recommend, you know you're doing something right. So what we realized is there was a lot of companies that came in and tried to make something that wasn't there. Whether it was breaking tile to make it look like there was more damage than there was, by having fake engineers, and I call them fake, they're probably real engineers, but they're writing fake reports saying that the roof was compromised, even though it wasn't, right? You know, when they started playing those games, adjusters really clamped down. Up until that point, it was, hey, we're all in this together. We're putting our town back together. There was really no question of things. But once they brought in 80 salespeople and they started hitting the market and pounding it and doing these, assignment of benefits and all that garbage, that's when the insurance company said, nope, we're not approving anymore. Prove it. And, they brought in their fake engineers and all that. And it really hurt the system. Today, if I'm looking forward to the future, in Florida, at least, and I'm sure whatever happens here is going to continue to spread around the rest of the country. We're the first ones that had a deductible as percentage of the value of your home. And it was up to 5%. So now let's say, for instance, you had a $300,000 home and your deductible is 5% on wind. Now, all of a sudden, your deductible is $15,000. That's about the price of a shingle roof on a single family home. There is no insurance help in that scenario, right? So we were the first ones to start that in Florida, 2004, 2005. It actually came out in 07. Well, what happened is that started spreading to the rest of the Gulf states and even up into the Midwest where the hail belt is, because insurance companies realized that they can stop a lot of this because the $400, $500 or $1,000 for your deductible was getting people free roofs all the time, because roofers could eat that and they could basically sell the free roof. There was nothing in the, it was in the homeowner's best interest to just go with it. Now it's not. There's a lot of money coming out of pocket. So homeowners are going to be much more crucial in who they pick to do the work, first of all. And second of all, you're not going to be able to set up shop, bring in 80 salespeople and just run the market like you used to be able to. Now, here's what's coming. AOBs are going away. So you as a policyholder have a contract with your insurance carrier. Your contract on your side, the homeowner, says you will pay a premium every single month. The insurance carrier says, if you have a loss, we will make you whole to pre-storm conditions. Pretty straightforward. It's basically a contract. And if the insurance carrier says, I'm not going to pay for your whole roof, even though it was damaged, that's a breach of contract. And you have the ability to take them to court. An assignment of benefits basically says that I, the homeowner, don't know enough about damage or roofing. So I'm going to assign an agent, a relative, an attorney, a contractor. I'm going to assign my rights to them. Everything they say is speaking as if I spoke. And by the way, once you assign your rights away, you can never come back into the agreement. So what they do is storm chasers will come in and they'll say, oh, the screen and enclosure is damaged. The gutters are damaged. There are scrapes on the wall, so it needs to be repainted. The house shifted a little bit and we need to repump the foundation and shore that up. We have to replace the roof. There's trusses that need to be refastened. They stack it up and make a huge claim out of it. Get it stuck in the court system. And the insurance carrier sometimes would say, you know what, it's better just to settle this at half what the total claim is rather than risking going into a court and getting the whole amount plus attorney's fees. So there was a lot of settlements that were going on. But since the homeowner signed an assignment of benefit, when the roofer did the roof, which is what they originally promised they would do, they pocketed the rest of the money for all the other trades that were part of the original scope of work. It really did a disservice. And what happened was our legislature in Florida recognized that that's what was happening. And so there are new laws, and Trent Cotney is doing a great job, he and his team, talking about these as they're coming up and making us aware of what's going on. There are new laws that are going to shut that down. No more assignment of benefits. There's already been one that's passed that really cut it down, but they're going to go even further. They're going to go even further to where if you write the scope of work, you can't do the work. They're going to go even further to say that insurance companies have the first right of refusal. In other words, if we come in and say there's damage and the insurance company says, no, there's not, there's nobody who can say anything otherwise and you cannot go to court. There's insurance companies that can elect to fix. So they have the first right to say, okay, I see the damage, I'm going to fix it. And they can send their own crew, they can pay them directly, and they can fix that. And you as a homeowner do not have any opportunity to say, I don't like the way it looks. Because the old adage was, if I had, let's say, for instance, a water leak in my home and I had carpet that ran throughout the bedroom, the utility room, and the hallway, and it all matched. Well, if that carpet's not available anymore and you had a water leak in the utility room, well, you're going to get the bedroom, you're going to get the hall replaced because I can't match it. So I can't, there's no place to stop. Well, the same thing is what was happening on the roof. We can't repair this one section that got wind damage because I can't get that shingle anymore. The colors won't match. Well, then we'd have to do the whole roof. And in Florida, there was a code that says once you get to 25% replacement, you have to do the whole thing. So these insurance companies were paying for whole new roofs, even though there was a couple of broken tile or a couple of ripped up shingles. And so what they did is they created laws to stop that. Now they don't have to. It's not like kind and color anymore. It's similar kind, don't have to match color. So, you know, they're going to take that doorway. If we're going back to the carpet analogy, they're going to stop at the doorway. They don't have to do the bedroom and the hall anymore. And they're going to do the same thing on the roof. So I'm going to replace the back section, the one that actually had hail on it, but I'm not going to replace the rest of the roof. So these are coming in, they're changing.
So again, let me ask you, if AOBs are disappearing, is there a risk for contractors losing their voice in that insurance process?
That's exactly what's happening. There's no question. That is exactly what's going to happen. But in essence, we abused it, right? Our industry allowed it to be abused. And here we are because of it. And it will spread because it hopefully affected the bottom line. Now, you look at governors like ours, Governor Ron DeSantis, right? He knows that 2.6 million of his residents in the state out of 19 million are senior citizens over the age of 65. And all of the 2.6 million that I'm giving you, because there's more of them that are over 65, but the 2.6 million that I'm specifically citing are those that are relying on a fixed income. They know, like he knows, that if your homeowner's insurance doubles, you can no longer afford to live here, right? So he has to do something, and the legislature has to do something to stop this from running away, because that's exactly what's happening right now to our homeowner's insurance rates. They're doubling year over year. And I mean, double this year and then double again next year. And it's up to us to prove to the insurance company that we're not high risk by something called the windstorm mitigation affidavit, where we can attest to 7 major areas that have been upfitted or hardened so that we can better withstand future storm. Like, this is a lot of burden coming back on homeowners. And it really is taking a lot of the control out of the hands of roofers, general contractors, engineers, attorneys, and so forth.
Well, wow, it sounds like we could set up another podcast just to dive into that insurance. But really, the relevance is that if it does work in Florida, it's likely to be copied in other places. I did want to ask you specifically, looking back on the Irma experience, if what experiences would you consider, did you witness any ugliness when it came to the insurance carriers and how that relationship worked with homeowners and contractors even at the time? And what did you learn about that to hopefully, you know, improve your operations in relationships with them going forward?
Yeah, we're a big fan of always be honest and communicate early, because if you ever say something that's not true, you're just going to dig yourself a hole. And there was a bunch of that going on. You know, yeah, I have a license, and they didn't, right? And here you have a roof that's wide open, and you have people who are being drug away in handcuffs and being charged with a third degree felony contracting without a license, right? There's some real ugliness. And then boom, a rainstorm comes in and it damages the house because it was left wide open, right? It's that kind of ugliness that's going on. Yeah, that there was a lot of that. Now, from the insurance company to the homeowner, once the insurance company clamped down and was no longer approving things that were legitimate, and they made everybody prove it, that's where everything came to like a screeching crawl. And it's much more difficult now to even take care of those that have a legitimate claim, have legitimate damage, because now the insurance company says, listen, we're going to deny it. We're going to take you to court, and you know, we're going to make you defend yourself or prove it. And it puts a lot of the burden back on the homeowners. The homeowners, they're not in this world that we're in, right? They're not in the world of contracting. And they've never sued anybody in their life. And that's what you're doing. You're suing your insurance company. And there's this fear that you're going to get put on a list, right? There's this, oh, you know, I don't want them to raise my rates because I filed a claim. Everyone's rates are being raised. You have legitimate, this is what you paid 20 years into them for. You deserve this. Unfortunately, your neighbor didn't, and he got a new roof, right? But you deserve this. And it's like that ugliness that's hard to explain and walk through the process with a homeowner. So I'm going to, if you give me a minute or two, I'm going to give you a great analogy here, okay? This is the analogy that we really use to help homeowners understand the insurance side of their policy to them, so it makes sense, okay? And I love this because anyone could understand. And it gets dark, but so is you having a roof that's damaged, right? So let's say, for instance, God forbid, you hurt your knee, right? You're doing hot yoga and you twist your knee. And you now know that you're gonna have to have an operation. You go to your local doctor, he's like, you know, you got some torn ligaments in there, we're gonna have to give you an operation. But that's not something I do. Right? You really want to see a specialist. You want to see a knee surgeon, orthopedic. They're the ones that can do this. So let me ask you, you have health insurance. Health insurance is going to pay for this. Do you go online, get 12 different bids from different doctors to see who's the cheapest is? No. The only thing you care about is who's done this a lot, who is local, you know, if you have a problem or complication, you can call their cell phone or go into their office the next day to take a look at it and see what's going on, right? Somebody who has an unbelievable track record, plenty of customers around the area that maybe even call, friends that you know that have gone through the rehab and have had great success. That's what you're concerned about. The last thing that's on your mind is how much is this going to cost? Because
I think we all think if they wear a white coat that they're going to be they're God and they're going to make it perfect anyways. So maybe as roofers we should wear white coats.
You bring up an excellent point. Excellent point. Yes, we are not all the same, and this is what you have to get your homeowners to understand when you're in that insurance world. You say whether it's me, the other roofer that just moved in last night, we are all going to get paid the same amount. The insurance company pays based on the size of the roof and the type of materials you're tearing off and putting on. And that's it. We all get paid the same. So do you want the guy who's used to working in, you know, an area 12 states away? Or do you want the roofer who's been here, understands these local codes, has crews that live here, and is going to be here afterwards to service your building? Yeah, because at the end of the day, you're just going to pay your deductible. And whoever you get is going to get the same amount of money. So why wouldn't you want the best surgeon or the best roofer? And see, that analogy, that takes time to communicate to people.
That's a great analogy.
It is. And like you were saying, Jill, like a lot of people don't realize that or we as an industry don't do a good enough job separating ourselves and proving and showing the differentiation between those who do it right and those who don't. And that's why I say stick to your normal sales process. Because if you just go in and you email a quote, or you just say, yeah, I can get you a free roof, or I can do it for your deductible, there's no differentiation between you and the next guy.
Ken, did your Irma and insurance experiences change any of the product lines that you used, or and your approach to warranties?
Very good question. The short answer is no. As a matter of fact, we as a sense of efficiency almost installed the same roof on every single home that we did. And even if the insurance company would not provide for it. In other words, the customer's existing roof, which is all the insurance company will give you for, right? Replacement of like, kind, or quality, didn't have the upgraded items like the additional fasteners or sealants or upgraded wind code products. We would still install the same roof and we would still pay for the extended warranty. If we're talking about shingle manufacturers, especially low slope is the same thing. We would still pay for that extended warranty and still put on those upgraded products. And the reason why is a couple fold. Number one, if you're doing the same thing over and over again and all your crews are doing it, you know, you have 30 crews out there every single day and you have hundreds of individuals out on the field. Right? We're running 8 and 10 individual crews, people on these crews, right? 8 to 10 people, because you need to turn and burn. You need to get through them quickly. And if all of a sudden this one's a little bit different than that one, and you've got all these different products and you're not quite sure what the nail spacing is on this one, or if this one's getting ridge vent or off ridge vent, that's a mess. If you can standardize the process, even though it might cost you a little bit more money on material and labor, you're able to do more work in a shorter period of time, right? So what we're able to do is go and sell that as almost like a little additional benefit going up front. Listen, your old roof didn't have this manufacturer's extended warranty, but since we're going to put on this new high wind resistant starter strip shingle and these new hip and ridge shingles, you can qualify for it. So we're going to go ahead and throw that in for you. Now on the back end, it also takes a lot of liability off of us, because the last thing I want to do is count my chickens and then 2 years later, start having to give them back. Right. So now I know I'm out of the 2 year window. Anything that's an issue, that, you know, I've got a backing, I've got support from the manufacturer who's going to come in and help us out on that claim.
Right. And I think also worth mentioning is that when you do start to deviate from your standard installation approach, that's where you can introduce mistakes. That's where, you know, guys who are used to doing it a certain way, you know, all of a sudden you're introducing a new way or scaling that back, that's where probably some problems can arise, right?
Exactly right. I mean, there's a reason why the chassis of the Toyota Camry is the same as the Lexus ES350, right? They're essentially the same car. The emblems are a little bit different. The interior might be a little more stylish, right? But they're essentially the same vehicle. And why? Because you can get economies of scale and you can get fewer defects. And this goes back to the Toyota Way, which is a fantastic book. If you want ideas on how to improve the efficiency of your operations, The Toyota Way by Jeffrey Leichner, great book. They talk about why they do that. It's all about getting that economy of scale, get that efficiency and fewer defects.
Ken, are there any machines you don't know about or don't understand at a granular level?
Absolutely plenty. The only thing that I do, I commit to reading a book every 2 weeks. So it helps, you know, even if it's not enjoyable to read, I still trudge through it because, as Voltaire said, if we shall not find something we like, at least we shall find something new.
Now, do you read or do you listen?
Listen, very good. Good catch. I suck at reading. It puts me to sleep. So instead, I typically listen when I'm working out or driving.
Oh, nice.
Wow. Well, I really have only one more insurance, I guess, related question. And before we can move on, and it does kind of touch on how you mentioned how you scaled up, you know, at that time. Certainly there was some risk involved in even though you had trusted people in charge, did that risk of how you approached scaling up during the Irma response. Did that ever come back to bite you? And you know, were you doing some of your own repair work, you know, in that time, you know, regrettably? And what, I guess, ultimately, what's the lesson for other roofers coming out of trying to use that approach?
So good question, Art. And yes. So the couple things I want to first address, that we're not perfect. If you go on social media and you look back to the time around September, October, November of 2017, you're going to see a lot of negative reviews. And it affected me personally. I wasn't sleeping well. It really hurt me, because I knew that we are not the company that they were talking about or writing about. And really it boiled down to expectations. Prior to the storm, we were Johnny on the spot. You know, if you called us for an estimate, we were out there next day. If you need an emergency service, we're probably out there same day, right? That's the level of service and the level of commitment and the level of reputation that we had built. But now a storm comes and you have all of this work and you have all of these past customers who are begging, and there's people you have to say no to. And when you look at these reviews, it's like, you know, I called them and they said they wouldn't be here for 3 weeks. I couldn't ramp up fast enough. And it really, really hurt me, like personally, okay? I responded to every single one of them personally. You'll see the comments in there. I apologized, and I was quite forthcoming. You know, if we made a mistake, I admitted it, right? There are things where photos were uploaded on one job, and they were actually for another. So when the invoicing was written, it was the wrong amount. And we're customers we overcharged, and there are other customers we undercharged. And they questioned the bill, guilty. You know, that our team made a mistake. We made it right, but we still made lots of mistakes, right? We go to do an emergency repair. We take care of three of the areas. We didn't realize there was a fourth. Next rain, there's a leak. They charged me and they screwed up, and you know, my roofs continued to leak. We sent them back out. We got it. But you know, you make those mistakes. But here's a real important warning to those who are going to play in this world. When you are doing an instant increase in revenue, if you have instantly significantly more employees, if you're instantly pulling more permits, all of a sudden you're on a radar. And every single alphabet agency visited us within 12 months of the storm. We had an audit from them all, whether it was the Department of State, the state's attorney's office, OSHA, multiple OSHA visits, IRS, you know, the licensing, you name it. We had a visit from them. And here's how it would go. We have a contract, we're doing a job, and we have our truck on site, which is labeled Kelly Roofing everywhere. And we also have a personal truck from one of our employees, because you know, you're growing and it's a lot easier if they bring the personal truck and then they can put more people in it, so you don't have guys sitting in the back or something along those lines, right? That personal truck doesn't have a license number on it. They might take a magnet and put Kelly Roofing sign on the side, but if it doesn't have all of our license numbers, then we're in violation of a state law, because every time you advertise, you have to list your license number. And we're guilty of that, right? It was a miss. When we had our magnets printed, we forgot to put the license number. And state's attorney's office, boom, here's the citation. You know, it was no money. It was just a warning. But still, that's something you have to deal with when you have all of this other stuff going on. OSHA looks at permit records. They look at who's pulling the most number of permits. Oh, they're a big company. They can afford the fines. Boom, next thing you know, OSHA is on the same day, three different sites at the exact same time. Where do you go? Which one do you handle? You know, I wasn't alone. They hit a bunch of us, right? They brought in investigators from all over the Southeastern United States, like 60, 70 of them all at once, and they hit the whole town. And we got rolled up into that. So my lesson to you is, even though it is, you know, an excitable time, even though it is not normal, you are expected to operate as if it was. So only take on that which you're capable of doing. Try to run the system that you know works, that you're used to doing, that you can manage and watch. You know, don't get greedy, because you're going to end up giving it back, right? Looking back now, there's a couple things I'd do differently, but I'm very, very proud of our team. and how we handled that and how we got our hometown back to normal very quickly.
So Ken, coming out of that experience, how would you describe your roofing company now in terms of that retail store mix? If you have to give a 30-second kind of elevator pitch to describe your business, what is it nowadays?
Prior to the storm, we never traveled. We didn't do new construction. We wouldn't work for anyone that wasn't the actual owner of the building directly. We learned that when you are faced with adversity, you put a little effort to it, you can figure anything out. Today, we travel all over. We do commercial, residential, new construction, re-roof, service, repairs, coatings, doesn't matter. If it's an opportunity and we can make it profitable, we can design a system around it and we can do it just as well, if not better than others. That's what I learned.
Wow. So it really opened up, going back to the playbook reference, it really opened everything up to you for you guys.
It did. It's a system. So if I add another product line to the system or a different customer type to the system, as long as I get to go through the system in the same way, doesn't matter who or where we're working for, I'm ready and I can do it.
That's so interesting. So, because I think before Irma, you pretty much worked pretty tight area. And so now is that totally different now then, is what you're saying?
It's totally different. So now my role has changed quite significantly within the organization. I've completely turned over daily operations to our executive leadership team. My role now is to buy other roofing companies and roll them into our organization to expand our footprint both geographically and through the systems we install so that we can better service the relationships that we've created.
Now that's exciting news. That's a big change.
It is a big change.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But I'm loving it. If you know the story, like I was talking on the last podcast about Greg Wallach and how he mentored me and how I gave that back, whether it was speaking at Best of Success or writing in Roofing Contractor Magazine, love those opportunities to give back. This is essentially doing the exact same thing. The contractors that I'm working with today stay in their role. They keep their name. They keep doing everything that they've ever done. And all I'm doing is bringing anything that I can to help them. I give them a menu. I said, I feel as though we do really well on this computer side of things. We've got a decent sales system. We think it works really well. If that can help you, you want that. And if they do, my role is to go in and to teach and help. And I love doing that. As you know, I love giving back. And that's exactly what I'm doing.
Well, I think, Ken, we definitely want to dive into a lot about what you're doing and your future forecast in our next podcast. Is to wrap up, this piece, coming out of Irma, I imagine you probably didn't envision you would have to transition or pivot so closely again. Or maybe not. The way that you would set up your system, it sounds like you're very, you want to maintain your flexibility.
True. And I assume you're referring to COVID.
Yep.
So there is this Wolf of Wall Street moment that everyone in the office continues to talk about, where COVID hit and we started the 15 days to slow the spread, right? Everybody go home, nobody work. And I'm like, this is the first time I'm a president of a roofing company for 28 years. And it's the first time anyone's told me I can't go to work. I'm like, this is America. What do you mean I can't go to work? And I made this comment in the office and everyone just kind of got behind it. I was like, no, we're going to work. They're going to have to pull us off the roof in handcuffs because we ain't stopping. You know, it was like one of those type moments. And it kind of defined us. We were pretty fortunate to be in the state that we're in because we never really got shut down. We were deemed essential and we were able to buy materials and work and all that kind of stuff. And ended up having quite the renaissance during that period. 2020 was really good to us. And it continues even now as the economy continues to grow. But, we realized that when you don't have to make all the decisions, when you can rely on your team, when your team understands what that commander's intent is, they all of a sudden start picking up the ball and running with it. And you're just there kind of observing and telling them, thank you and great job. Now that's really what the role ends up being. You put the challenge out there and you let everybody rise to the occasion. And they're really, I'm so proud of the team. They're doing an amazing job.
All right, Ken. Well, thank you for that. And looking forward to hearing a lot more in our next installment of the series. Jill, back to you.
Wow, Ken, thank you so much. Those are absolutely incredible stories and insights from everything that you've experienced from Irma. And yes, like Art said, we look forward to talking some more about COVID. And there's some great nuggets of information there for contractors who are either listening or watching. But if you do have any questions, please be sure to reach us at roofingcontractor.com. And while you're there, make sure you sign up for our free e-magazine and our e-newsletters. Check out all the great articles on Kelly Roofing. And please, everybody, stay safe and healthy. And we look forward to talking with you next time.